Welcome to episode 35 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. We apologize that it has been a very long time since we last recorded. Life happens, and we were both gone on trips, and so we're happy to be back. And
Yes.
we're still talking. We didn't have a big fight or anything. And mom's okay.
Mom's okay. Yeah, we were busy talking about all of you.
By the way, mom said we don't say hi mom enough lately.
Oh,
So,
hi, Mom.
hi mom, right up front. Get that in there. The holidays are coming up, and we would like to remind everybody of previous episodes. If you ever miss us, you can always go back. The very first episode that we did, we talked about an apple cider cocktail, which is excellent for the fall. Episode two was a tart tatin, which is an apple dessert, a French apple tart. It's really good. Episode three was Aunt Betty's famous rolls, which are a must-have at Thanksgiving.
Yes, that's the Thanksgiving standby.
Yep.
Yes.
And Christmas, really.
Yes, all major holidays, really.
All major holidays. Easter. Yeah, you're right. Pumpkin bread in episode four, and then the cranberry sauce and cranberry cocktail in episode 22. So,
These are all moments that you can go back and incorporate into Thanksgiving, which is practically upon us. So we thought it made sense to talk about something that we have done at Thanksgiving with the turkey. This isn't really so much a recipe as a technique. It's called spatchcocking the turkey, which is basically a technique for cutting the backbone out of the turkey and flattening it. So instead of it being upright and having all those issues with the breasts drying out and the thighs maybe not being cooked enough, this flattens it all out. It also makes it so that it cooks a lot more quickly. But what a great word, spatchcock. It's just fun to say. So I got very curious about its etymology, and it is believed to come from the 18th century Irish phrase dispatching the cock or killing the chicken or rooster. It could also come from the term spitchcock, which is from Middle English for what you do when you split an eel lengthwise and cook. I suspect it's actually closer to the Middle English for spetch, to split and then cook. So to split and cook.
Yeah, that makes a little more sense then, because dispatching the cock is really cutting off its head more like, or breaking the neck than splitting the back.
I came across a wonderful essay by Kim O'Donnell, a fellow University of Pennsylvania graduate who started as a writer, journalist, and then went to cooking school and did a lot of writing and teaching about food. Especially, she did a blog for the Washington Post. And she has this newsletter called Lulu Pork Chop, where she wrote an essay called Spatchcock, a Culinary Term for Our Times. So, needless to say, I had to read that. It actually came out in 2022, shortly after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. But I think it still resonates today, especially in light of recent events last week.
Unhappy events, yeah.
I want to read just a little bit about what she says from that essay, Spatchcock, a Culinary Term for Our Times. Spatchcock is both a noun and a verb, a cooking technique and a finished dish. You might say, we're having spatchcock tonight, or let's fire up the grill and spatchcock. Spatching the cock means to cut out its back, turn it breast side up, and press on the chest until it's completely flattened. My friend Anne says spatchcocking is kind of violent, and she's right. A lesser known non-culinary definition of spatchcock is to interpolate, which is another way of saying to corrupt, alter, or insinuate someone or something into a situation, to sandwich in foreign matter or inject something that doesn't belong. Like, for example, the government in my uterus and yours. And then she goes on to talk about her various choices in her own life. But she says, the right to decide allowed me to become the woman I am. The choices that were mine to make allowed me to forge my own path. They've given me the wisdom to know this. Without safe, legal abortion, this country is spatchcocked.
That's so true. Oh, yeah. It is a great word. And so you can spatchcock your turkey. You could practice on a chicken because, of course, chicken is smaller. I asked my husband to spatchcock our turkey 1 year, and he wound up using our rolling pin for some reason to, I guess, to break the breastbone or something. He wrecked the rolling pin. And so you can also ask your butcher to spatchcock your turkey. And that's what I usually do, because it is great to, it's a great way to cook the turkey. Cooks a lot faster and it cooks more evenly. Skin gets nice and crisp.
The skin, like on the thighs, it gets really crispy and almost overdone on top, but then underneath it's kind of mush. And
Right.
this way, all of the skin is on the surface on top. There are a number of videos on YouTube, and we can put in a link. The one I like the best was from Martha Stewart. And she actually shows you two methods, but basically, you turn the bird over so the breast side is facing down. And then I usually start with the neck facing me. I find it's easier to cut from the neck down to the tail because you can kind of see the backbone more easily for some reason for me. I use scissors. You can use a boning knife, but you basically just kind of start and you cut down the one side next to the backbone. And then when you get to the tail, you do the same thing on the other. And then you've got the backbone, which you should save for making bone stock. Well, turkey stock, yeah. But it is a little, I don't know what the word is, like shocking or arresting to see how the turkey kind of lies there with its legs sort of folded in. That's what happens when you don't have a backbone. Everything just kind of folds.
Yeah.
And one of the things I like about it, I generally do not stuff the turkey with stuffing. I will cook it on top of stuffing when I spatchcock it because, you know, you're not cooking it for 4 or 5 hours. And I always worry about it, the stuffing not being cooked fully if it's in the bird. And I
Yeah,
don't
there's like a, is it salmonella? There's some kind
know.
of.
Yeah, that's, but if the turkey is sitting on top of stuffing, then, you know, you get the nice turkey juices kind of going into the stuffing, but it gets, since it's exposed, it gets nice and crispy too on the top. You could also put it on a bed of potatoes and carrots and veg. I actually also like to do, Ina Garden has her roasted chicken. She puts in a whole head of garlic and lemons and rosemary. Sometimes I'll just get some lemons, garlic, potatoes, and rosemary and just lay it on top of that. And that's really good.
So I put on a cookie sheet like a mirepoix, so the carrots, onions, and celery dice, and then a rack that fits in inside the cookie sheet because it's made to do that, I guess. And then I put the turkey on top of that, dripping there.
And then you can put butter, you can salt and pepper, herbs, and you get a lot more nice crisp skin if you're a skin eating person.
According to the experts, being Layla and Birgit,
Hi, Layla. Hi, Birgit.
the turkey skin is really good for you. So,
Well, and I did learn too, and I have noticed this just other times. If you really want crisp skin, spatchcock it and then leave it in the fridge for a couple of hours, not covered with anything. The skin will kind of dry out, and then you'll get really nice crispy skin doing that. But it's a great method. And Booty City Mouse has her butcher do it.
And I don't do the bone broth. Maybe I'll do the bone broth.
You should do the bone broth.
Ina also says that the homemade stock is always way better than
I think
boxed.
Ina has the recipe. I don't know if this is just padding, but I think she has the recipe for chicken stock and beef stock in every one of her cookbooks. That's how much she believes in homemade. That said, I actually don't make homemade chicken stock. I don't buy a chicken to make stock. I basically always roast a chicken. And then I actually pour some water into the pot and boil it to kind of get all the good stuff in there. And then I'll transfer it to a stock pot. But I pretty much only make bone stock, which is basically stock from the leftover bones after you've eaten the chicken or the turkey. And then I throw in the backbone, or you know how sometimes occasionally you'll be making something with chicken breasts and you don't have regular boneless chicken breasts, so you'll debone them. And I'll always save that stuff and put it in with an onion and chopped up garlic, the mirepoix, celery and carrots, some herbs, bay leaves.
Yes.
Which,
Yes.
by the way, I have started doing this with bay leaves. I know there are people who say bay leaves don't add any flavor, which is true if you open up your bay leaf container and then you let it sit there for 6 years. Probably not
That's
going to
true.
have a lot of flavor.
Right. And it's true that you don't need a lot of bay leaves.
And you end up, but here's a tip. Treat yourself to a new jar of bay leaves for this Thanksgiving. Use the ones that you need. And when you open it up, take all the rest of them that you don't need and put them in a little bag, plastic bag or container, and put them in the freezer. And then they will actually retain their true bay leaf flavor.
Very good tip. Yes.
Because I
Yes.
do put in, you know, bay leaves into the bone stock. And by the way, most of the flavor from chicken and turkey actually does come more from the bones and the various enzymes that kind of seep out of the bones and less from the muscle. So that's why roasting is really good. And using that bone stock, you'll actually get more flavorful broth. Even it'll almost get that gelatiny collagen that comes from the bones and the sinews.
Excellent information. Wow, I'm learning a lot here.
I believe in bone stock.
Might become a bone stock convert.
Yes. Well, and once you have it, and I do have to say, I put it, you know, I'll make like 12 cups at a time and freeze. I freeze them in different amounts, so 2 cups, 4 cups.
And what do you freeze them in? What containers?
I usually freeze them in sort of a flat rectangular container. I have ones that they're 3 cups. So I'll freeze them in a 3 cup thing and then I'll pop them out of that and use the vacuum sealer and I'll write the date on that and the amount. And it's pretty flat, so it doesn't take up a lot of room. I don't think that the 4 cup containers that are kind of tall, they tend to take up a lot of room in my freezer.
Right. And they're round, so that's
And they're
not,
round, yeah.
yeah. Okay.
So,
And so you're talking about like to-go containers that you put them in?
yeah, I have these little rectangular ones that I bought for something, and they 3 cups perfectly in it, and they really work well. So they're kind of flat. They're maybe about 2 inches high and maybe 6 or 8 inches long and 4 inches wide, but almost like the size of a brick.
Excellent tips. So,
Just to sum up, so definitely try spatchcocking. It will be an excellent source of conversation at Thanksgiving. You'll have to talk about the word. You'll have to talk about what it looks like. You'll have to talk about how our country is spatchcocked. All of those things. You're welcome.
Yes.
And then make the bone stock from the turkey carcass and that leftover spine that we don't have in our country
It
anymore.
is somewhat fitting, yeah, that we are removing the spine this year.
From our own national holiday. It's an act of rebellion.
Yes, there you go.
But so, Booty, we have to talk about Rhinebeck, which I realize is a while back.
Some podcasters will actually podcast on the spot from Rhinebeck. Not us. No, we wait.
No.
No, we wait a month so we can really think about the things.
What was it your son said about waiting? I love this.
He said that some people would probably say, "Oh, Rhinebeck is really fun when they're it's at the moment." Whereas you guys, you think about it for a month and you'll say it was joyous.
Joyous.
And that's the difference, is
That's what a month of marinating and macerating
right.
gets you. You move from it was fun to it was joyous. I have to say, I feel like Rhinebeck is its own pop culture moment.
Well, you
And
meet a lot of stars.
yes.
So right there, that's we're gonna call our Rhinebeck our pop culture moment, because I think the and we said this last year, after kind of following these people online and Instagram for a really long time and actually getting to meet them in person is really, really exciting. And at this point, I think I've met Aimée Gilles like four or five times. She's probably tired of me.
No, for her, every time is the first time.
That is true because she meets so many people. She's very gracious about it. She did remember me on the third or
And the
fourth.
time you followed her into the bathroom?
There was that. That was the first time. I didn't follow her into the bathroom. I waited till she came out.
Oh, that's really different. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I said, "Can I get a picture?" Or no, I didn't get a picture. I just said, "I really wanted to meet you." And then I got a picture at a different at when she was at a store on Bainbridge Island, La Mercerie. And then I went to a class that she did in Issaquah at Nifty Knitter. So anyway, she's great. And she gave us a bunch of stickers. That was very nice.
Which I have on my computer. And
Ooh.
that's how I can tell my computer from all the other computers that the university issues. So that's very important.
That's a good thing.
Well, my favorite moment just at the beginning was when we pulled into the parking lot and there were these two women who got out of their car and took a picture of the parking lot and said, "See, there are more cars here than at a Patriots game." Which I think is like the only time that a sheep and wool festival and a Patriots game has ever been compared.
Yeah. And I mean, the weather could not have been better. It was absolutely just this gorgeous fall weekend. And
Yeah, for me, I really enjoyed meeting, well, seeing, I had met him down in Atlanta when I went to that yarn store. But Vincent Williams was there. He has a pattern in a book by Jared Flood's Brooklyn Tweeds, Knit and Crochet Blankets. Vincent Williams has a pattern in that. So I bought the book and had him sign it.
he is awesome. Yeah, he's just such a nice, friendly, and funny.
He just exudes this wonderful, warm spirit that you just want to be around
Yes.
and it's so kind. I'm really looking forward to actually, this was what I think I enjoyed the most was all the books and meeting the authors.
I think we have a pretty good list here of celebrity knitters. So Vincent Williams is a designer and teacher at a yarn shop in Atlanta.
Yes.
His handle is Vesuvius Crafts. We'll put links to all this in the show notes. So he's fabulous. Patty Lyons, she's only written one book, but she's been teaching for years and years at all kinds of Vogue knitting and various things. She has a lot of patterns, and she really gets into the nitty-gritty of techniques and tricks. And so her book is actually called Knitting Bag of Tricks.
We had talked about it at a previous episode.
We talked about it in another episode.
And she actually has a workbook that she's selling now that kind of takes you through exercises, right?
Right. Sarah, and I don't know how to say her last name, Schira, Shira, and she is the Gnomes of Grimblewood.
Oh, I loved her.
She is the gnome lady, and she has all kinds of gnome puns, which are really great. It's the Gnomes of Grimblewood, yeah. And Jamie Lomax, who is the doodle.
For color work. Yeah, I did buy her book, The Doodle Knit Directory by Jamie Lomax, 200 mix and match motifs and patterns for knitted accessories. But you can really use these basic color work patterns for, you could make your own hat or you could mix and match them. So it's a really great book for the perchance to dream and create your own designs, pulling in some of these different color work things. And I haven't done that much color work, so I was kind of excited by this.
Yeah, and she has a travel one now. So it has Dublin. I think these are packs that you can buy.
Yes, she's got these little like cards. Yeah.
Right. So it's like playing cards, but you're mixing and matching these motifs. So I know it has Dublin and Paris, probably Seattle, because she's actually from Seattle. So I had met her in Seattle at Hazel Knits, which was super fun. We saw Bristol Ivy, who is a designer, and she's written a number of books too. I'm kind of surprised she wasn't in the book signing, but she's also a tech editor, and she tech edits Marie Greene's patterns. Gigi,
Did you?
who,
Yep.
yes, the Queen of Orange, she was decked out in an orange.
And we saw the grocery girls several times.
We saw the Grocery Girls, and who I love because, sisters that have a podcast about knitting. So that is great. We didn't see Andrea Mowry, but we saw her represent.
She was well represented by many knitters. It's always amazing to me that when you go, I mean, I've only been to Rhinebeck twice, but you go and there's always one pattern that you see that seems to have caught the collective fancy. And this year it was definitely Andrea Mowry's Framed. There were literally hundreds of women wearing the sweater at the meetup. And it was kind of magical, almost like all the pussy hats in
Yes.
2016. There was a lot of variations, colors, and sizes, and that was great to see. Well, and Booty, aren't you working on something of the Framed?
Yes, so I've been working on, okay, so in the
Wah, wah.
category, don't do what I did. And I have done this. I made two mistakes recently on projects that I know better. And yet, I continue to do the same thing. Framed is two colors. I think the best way to do it is to hold one color in one hand and one in the other. So essentially, you're knitting continental in your left hand and throwing or English in your right hand.
That seems too complicated for me, but go on.
I am really uncomfortable with continental knitting. But I can do this. It actually is not that bad. I do sort of feel like I'm holding my breath Till I get around to the end of the row. Whenever you're working with two colors, you really want to have high contrast. But I also really like a variegated yarn. So my thought was to have a solid and a variegated, and that would really frame or showcase the variegated because the solid would be in between. I didn't look closely enough at the yarn, and the variegated has just a little bit of the same color as the solid.
Oh,
And so whenever they're side by side,
they start to look the same.
yeah, there's not enough contrast. Tanis Gray, I took a course with Tanis Gray online, and this was through my Knit Camp app. There's a retreat. She gets really good people for her retreat, and it's like 3 days, and you get all of the classes, so you don't have to pick and choose. It's a really good deal, and she gets these famous people. So Tanis Gray was one of them. She's done the Harry Potter knitting book,
Oh, okay.
Star Wars. She's done a ton of books. Color work is definitely her jam. She's a really good friend of Marie's, and it's funny because Marie does not do color work. You can do one color at a time, but not in the same row. So Tana said there's a candy cane test. You take a needle and then you put both of your yarns around the needle like a candy cane. And if you don't see enough
Contrast.
contrast, then you're not, or if it's not good contrast, if the colors are not looking good, then that's a good way to test and see. So I should have done that. They're very pretty colors. It's not the end of the world, but
Yeah, it does convey that the framed part. I mean, we literally saw that pattern everywhere. And in fact, while I was waiting in line for cider donuts, well, and we should say that we had to go twice for those because the first day we went and we go up and we're like, well, the line's not that bad. It was towards the end of the day. And then this guy who's at the end of the line says, are you getting in line for cider donuts? And we're like, yes, we are. And he's like, no, you're not. Nope. I'm the end of the line here to tell you that you're not getting any cider donuts. I'm like, wow, that's your job. And he's like, yes, it is. And I was tempted to be like, oh, look over there. And then we could have just run around in front of him. But we didn't. But the next day, I went earlier because we learned from our mistakes.
Unlike my color work.
Yeah. I met this lovely woman. I think she's from Minnesota. She came down on a bus with a whole group of women that they have a knitting circle together, and they had all done Andrea Mowry's framed in some way. And she said, in fact, there was one woman who had knit a frame sweater, and then on the bus ride, she knit a matching hat, which I was pretty impressed by because that's a complicated pattern.
Yeah, it's a very fun pattern. The other tip that Tanis Gray had that was really brilliant was when you're doing a color chart like that, put your sticky note above where you're working. So a sticky note is great because it'll highlight what row you're on, and then you just move it on until it loses a stickiness, and then you get another one. But instead of putting it underneath where you're working, put it on top because that way you see where you are, what you've done.
Oh, yeah,
And
that's good. Yeah.
yeah, and so you keep moving it up. But if you're trying to kind of have a conversation, it's doable, but it's the pattern is such that you it's not the same thing in every row or anything, but it does kind of make sense as you're going along. You kind of see what it's
Good
supposed to
point.
look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really great though to see all of these women, and they had the meetup, and there were literally hundreds of these women wearing the sweater that this one person had designed. For me, the other moment too was I saw these two women, I think they were sisters, and they were wearing this cable sweater that was matching. And I've been kind of intrigued by cables. I did a cable thing once, and I did blankets that had some squares that were cables. And I really haven't done very many sweaters, but this had a cable pattern. It's Eurus, Eurus. Of course, I stopped and asked them for the pattern, which they gave to me, or they told me. But the cabling is horizontal, and you actually start it on the sleeve. So you start with sleeve island and you end with sleeve island. But and then you knit it flat once you get up to the shoulder. But I loved seeing somebody wearing something that just immediately I wanted to make it. That's the cool thing about Rhinebeck. And it's great because you can go up and say, I love that sweater. What's the pattern? And they won't look at you like you've got three heads. You know, they'll be like, oh, well, it's yours. How advanced of a knitter are you? It's a little complicated.
Oh, that was another one. The mushroom hats.
Oh, yes.
They were so fabulous. These women were wearing these big mushroom hats, sort of like a beret, but bigger. And they looked so cute.
Yeah, we took a picture of them so we can put that on, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't get the Eurus sweater
I know, I
sisters.
shouldn't ask them because they look so great in them, and it was just like this great sweater. And they were right. I have started it, and they were right that it is a little complicated, and I'm still figuring that out. And I've had to have some knitting consultations with Booty to guide me through and to listen to me complain. That's always fun for other people. Why is this so hard? I don't have the right needles.
Yes, it's always the equipment. It's
Yeah.
either the needles or, like in my case, it was the yarn. So it's
Yeah.
never us. It's the yes.
But
And for the record, nothing wrong with the yarn I bought. It's not their fault. It actually is my fault.
it's definitely my needles' fault. Yeah, I'm sticking to that. And we met this one just to, for next time. We are going to be interviewing a woman that we met at Rhinebeck, Christina Kading. She makes these really cool rugs, and we're going to be doing that for the next episodes. And then I bought a book by Roseanne Fleischauer, Cozy Coastal Knits. She was lovely. I really enjoyed talking with her, and she's from Massachusetts. So we had to talk about, she stops in Sturbridge, but she didn't know about Yankee Spirits, which is the crown jewel of Sturbridge, Massachusetts. So I was very pleased to share with her so she can buy alcohol on the way home. Don't say I don't help people with critical information.
Should put some of our cards at Yankee Spirits.
But it was very, I mean, it was beautiful day, and we hit it right with the color, and it's very inspiring to be around all these people. There was hope at that moment.
Yes, this was before the election.
We were living in this happy, hopeful moment of the halcyon days before everything was dashed and our spine was removed. Well, was there anything else, Booty, that you?
Well, I was just going to say the other thing that I did that just for any of you out there who are working on gifts. And you get in a rush because you're like, okay, gotta get this done. And I'm not really doing a lot of gifts, so. But I happen to have finished a sweater for my son, the Pokemon sweater, that was actually for his birthday slash graduation in May. So that's how I'm about 6 months behind. So maybe people will get Christmas gifts in June, July. But this has happened to me before, and I would think I would have learned from it, but I haven't. It's that when you block something, you soak it, and then you can put it in the washer on spin only. But if it's not super wash, I wouldn't do it because if
Oh, it felt it.
just a little bit.
Oh.
And this has happened to me before. It happened with the lemon spritz sweater that I made for myself and gave to my daughter. But this one just a teensy bit felted and it actually fits really great. So it's fine. But and actually the sleeves were a little too long and now they're not. It might have, I think it lost a little length as well, which was
Oh.
okay. So luckily it was a little loose and now it's fine. But anyway, so yes, the sweater luckily came out great and I'll put a picture of it. It was a cobblestone sweater pretty much by Jared Flood. I feel like I think Jared Flood must have the same body type as my son, except for maybe shorter. But all of his sweater designs look great. I've made now three, I think, and they're his favorite sweaters. So, and I modified it. I'll put what it in, and I used Brooklyn Tweed Shelter, which was his yarn. So,
No, well, so I'm in the middle of my cable knit, and I am enjoying cabling. I have to say, I don't think I realized that it's kind of for me the sweet spot of you do one row of the cabling, but then you basically have three rows of stockinette or in between. So it's enough to sort of keep you going. The other thing I didn't realize is how the purl rows between the cabling make the cabling pop, and that also makes it so that you can pretty easily see where you are in the pattern. So other than the difficulty of casting on the stitches after getting up to the shoulder, I am enjoying cable more than I thought, and it is good to learn something new. And I think that's what Rhinebeck, it's just all this new stuff and new people, really nice people. And I especially enjoyed meeting some of the authors and Vincent. And now we're back and Thanksgiving is almost upon us. So spatchcock that turkey and enjoy that and your bone stock and booty. I think it's time to say, whatever you do, don't knit like
Like
my
my
sister.
sister. But do check out the show notes.
And I will say this too, if you want to do something nice for Booty and Bossy, which we would appreciate,
Yeah, we would be thankful for
we
that.
would be thankful for that. Yes. Tell your friend, because the whole way that podcasts get any kind of listenership is by word of mouth. So if you enjoy this, if we
Yes.
met you at Rhinebeck and we remembered to give you a card and you happened to tune in to an earlier episode, because this is our first one since, and you enjoyed it, I realize there are a lot of ifs in that whole thing.
Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe and tell a friend, because that will help us a lot.
Yes. And thanks so much for listening.
Yes, thank you.